Seats. We are starting the forum in a couple minutes, so please find a seat.
Morning, John. How are you?
Doing all right.
We're waiting for AGP, then we'll be going on live. Just to remind everyone, this is a live program. Okay, all right. Good morning, everyone. I am Jennifer Redman, president of the Morro Bay Chamber. We want to thank everyone for being here today. We thank all of our candidates for coming here, and we thank every resident and business owner for being here, and all of you that are at home. Today, we're presenting the 2014 Candidate Forum. I will be turning this over to the League of Women Voters, who will be handling the support of Morro Bay in our future. Thank you so much.
Good morning. I want to express our appreciation to the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring this event. This candidate forum is going to be taped by AGP video and shown on Channel 20 live this morning, probably taped and shown later as well. My name is Marguerite Bader. Are they taping now?
Yes.
They are. Okay. Women voters, San Luis Obispo County, will be collecting questions from the audience. The collectors are Jean Conici and Vera Wallen, and sorting them so that we won't have duplications. A lot of people have this, questions about the same topic, so we kind of group them and pick the best wording. Emily Penfield and Valerie Steenson are doing the sorting. There are two candidates for the office of mayor, Jamie Irons and Carla Wixom. There are two city council members. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for their opening remarks, 1 minute to answer questions, and then 1 minute for their closing remarks. And we have a timer, Mary Beth Armstrong, who will let them know when they have 30 seconds, 1 minute, she will hold up a stop sign, at which point they may finish their sentence and they should then stop. We want everybody to have equal time to answer questions. So, to keep the forum running smoothly, please turn off your cell phones. Hold your applause until the end. Listen carefully to the speakers who have really insulting one another, which you would never consider doing, I'm sure. You can certainly disagree respectfully. Before you leave, check out the table in the back for voter registration forms. In case you have moved, you need to re-register. So we will take care of getting them to the the county clerk recorder if you fill them out. There are forms for joining the League of Women Voters. We have a 95-year history of nonpartisanship, which means we never endorse a party. But never a candidate or a party. So with that in mind, we will begin with the first introductory statement, Jamie Irons.
Good morning, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming today for this important information from all the candidates.
I've had the honor of serving as your mayor for the past 15 months. When I campaigned in 2012, I spoke of vision, values, and vitality. My vision included an updated general plan, a sustainable budget, and long-term objectives. We received a $250,000 grant to update our general plan. Our budget is balanced and all reserves are at required levels. Revenue generated from transient occupancy tax is up 12%. Street paving was reprioritized to address all neighborhoods, including North Morro Bay, and viable sites for our wastewater treatment plant location has been identified. I'm committed to continue in the great progress that we've made, and I want to thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Carla.
Excuse me. And those of you attending and watching at home, as candidate for mayor for the June 3rd election, I would be honored and proud to receive your vote. I've served on the City Council for 4 years, and I understand what's needed to move our city forward in the coming years to ensure a secure and vibrant community and economy for all the residents to enjoy, bringing Morro Bay together. Together as a community, I am firmly committed to working to balance our budget, living within our means, and restoring our recently depleted reserves, to creating a strong strategy to keep our city safe, including giving our public making decisions thoughtfully regarding the sewer, and avoiding processes that will add unnecessary stress to our community and increase costs to our ratepayers. Listening to the business community and their concerns, providing them with the relief necessary to help them grow and create jobs. And I am firmly committed to open-door government where the public is encouraged to come forward to participate. Working together, we can end the climate of secrecy and the trend of closed-door meetings recently held by the current City Council.
Thank you. John.
Here we go.
First That's
time I've
better.
Used one of these wonderful machines. Technology is amazing, isn't it? My name is John Heading. Excuse me. It is a great joy for me to be here, and thank you for being interested enough to come and join us this morning. And those of you that are watching on TV, good morning. I own a local business. I moved from Cambria, way far south, or excuse me, north. North. About 4 years ago, to Morro Bay, where I opened up a business. I immediately became involved in community activities. And one of our current city council persons, Christine Johnson, gave me a copy of a study that was done in 2008 called the Management Partners Study that has a lot of significant information. And when I read that, that's about 112 pages for those of you that like to read, it pointed to a city that was facing dire financial consequences if it didn't move quickly to change. So I'm here this morning after digesting a whole lot of information, talking with a lot of people in the one, build a wastewater treatment facility that is affordable to the community, and three, have us come together as a community and get rid of the divisiveness and the nastiness that seems to be occurring now. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Nancy.
There it is.
Good morning. Thank you very much for getting up and coming out this morning. I think I have a frog, too, just like some of my fellow campaign candidates up here. I'm here because I love Morro Bay. I have worked in Morro Bay for years. I've been on the City Council for the elected is to promote fiscally responsible budget policies that will return the money that's been lost from our reserves, to support our police and fire departments, which I know are very important to our citizens. Find long-term solutions to our water crisis. We do live in a desert, and while we are in a drought right now, this is not just a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I want to encourage tourism and our fishing industries. You may not know, but our fishing industry is the fifth largest agriculture. Address the impact of the new wastewater plant on our community and make sure we have the best plant that our citizens can afford. And, of course, the key word here is afford. Develop responsible solutions to our homeless problem. The homeless issue has grown. It's very complex, and a lot of people ask a lot of questions about it. Adopt city policies that will spur private investment to create new businesses and new jobs. We desperately need these in our community and to protect private. Due to my experience, honesty, and capability, I would be a very good city council member once again. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt.
Well, hello. My name is Matt Makowetsky, and I'm running for City Council. I'm a lifetime resident of Marl Bay, born and raised. I'm a high school English teacher. My people came here back about 1942. And one of the biggest reasons I'm running for City Council is I'd like to pay back and pay forward what my family and what people in the past generations have done for Marl Bay and pay it forward for Marl Bay. How I envision doing that. Transparency where that we can combine our residents with our business community and work together in a fashion that is above board and plans for the city in a very comprehensive manner. The first wave of things on the agenda that I think are kind of the elephant in the room obvious is the wastewater treatment plant. The city incorporated in 1964, and over that time, we've had two or three various designs on our wastewater treatment plant where it exists on 41 by the high school. This is a huge issue for Marl Bay. It's not an issue in 1 year or 5 years or 10 years, but we're looking at 20, 25, 35. Our dire responsibility to take this in mind and do it in a way that protects those people, not just right now, but for the future. When I say about right now, we're talking about and I'm chairperson of the Public Works Advisory Board, and one thing we're doing right now, we are starting to roll over our rate schedule for Marl Bay residents. And this is a huge issue for not only people sitting in the room, but those of you sitting at home. So looking ahead, that wastewater treatment plant is incredibly important. Next to that, one of the things we need to redo is our general plan for the city. We haven't had a general plan since 1988. Building on that transparency,
now we're ready to move into our questions, and we'll give you 1 minute to answer unless it's a complicated one. So we're going to start with Jamie. You'll be answering the first question and then Carla, etc. And when we get to the second question, we'll start with Carla. So everybody gets a chance to be first and everybody gets a chance to be last and so forth. So the first question, being the best idea that you championed during your public service,
question. I think the one thing I've been championing since actually on Planning Commission and as a mayor has been the general plan. The general plan has not been implemented. The general plan is something that is it's a long-term effort. And in 2008, our management partners report identified the general plan as the number one recommendation to affect our economy and draw more development into the city. And in 2011, that general plan that we had delivered to the Coastal Commission for certification had expired. For our community, and it's a long-term effort. That's one of the most important things that I've been driving forward with, and it's not going to be implemented in a year's time, but it's one that I will continue to champion until it is implemented.
Thank you. Carla, thank you for the question. It's always hard to pick one thing out. I know that one of the things we did that will take us into the future is our paperless agendas. May seem trivial, but environmentally, the long haul, it's good for us. I would say the paving management plan during my term on council. As we work to improve and replace our streets, securing funding to keep that program moving forward will be the crucial part of that. Thank you. John.
Well, I've not been in public service or in office here, so I'll answer it generally. In my former life, when I was hospital CEO, I was part of a number of countywide entities in the Central Valley, and specifically in the city of Merced, which is one of the most socioeconomically depressed investment board, as well as the countywide EVC, Economic Development Corporation. And I think I'm most proud of the fact that we worked very hard to bring the 10th campus of the University of California to Merced. That was the first campus built in since about 1964 and was a major and significant issue for the community.
Thank you. Nancy.
First, while I have championed several issues, I have never done them by myself. I have been working all day, and I think being part of a team is the most important part of being on City Council. But one of the things I'm proudest of was our work to be one of the first cities in the county to develop two-tier benefits for our employees. In the long run, this will save our city a lot of money and be a real move forward. Other than that, the pavement management plan has been a big one, and the removing smoking from our city streets. I know that has not been always taken care of. Hoping that we'll have better control of those kinds of things in the future.
Thank you. Matt.
As chairperson of the Public Works Advisory Board in the last 4 years, the biggest thing that I think that came that in front of my board and we were able to push to the city, it was our pavement management plan, as already spoken about twice. But however, the biggest overriding factor in that was this thing, transparency. It's very important that people, residents of Mall Bay, understand what's going on and they can see where they're represented in town and around town. And so through my chairmanship on that board and benefited against the other side of the city and spread it out citywide. And so now, if those of you people in North Mall Bay, you can see that our streets are being taken care of on a much more even basis. And also taking care of the South Mall Bay streets. So the pavement management index and transparency were the most important parts.
Thank you. You segued right into our next question and didn't even know it. There's several questions about transparency and the Brown Act, and I'm just going to just read one of them, and you feel free to address those issues when you get answer the question. If elected, and I'm starting with Carla, The portion prior to adjournment to close session is cablecast and recorded to inform the public of City Council activities and public and developer lessee comments.
Well, the answer, of course, would be yes. I think that we continue to strive to provide the opportunities for everything to be televised that can. There are always going to be items that come before us that are required to be handled in a closed-door session. Anything that is not required by the law, I would support that. Makes more sense.
Thank you. John?
The answer would be absolutely yes. I agree with what has been said. Everything needs to be done openly as much as possible. The Brown Act, of course, has certain requirements for closed sessions that are mandated. But outside of those mandates, I think there should always be the opportunity for significant public comment, discussion, significant public input from our community as a whole, because the decision isn't five people.
Nancy.
The idea of moving closed session meetings here is absolutely wonderful. The race to get from City Hall down here in about 2 minutes can be difficult, especially when we wouldn't want to exceed the city speed limit, of course. The Brown Act is exceptionally important on a lot of levels and needs to always be observed. The word transparency has been bounced around a lot already this morning, and I have a bit of a problem with that. I feel that we have to be transparent. I don't see any transparency there at all. Thank you.
Matt.
It would be a good idea to move the closed meetings to the Vets building. The Brown Act exists for a reason, and that's to protect us as a community, as voters. And so it protects us against people backroom deals or keeping things on the down low. So the Brown Act has to exist, and I appreciate that. On the Public Works Board, I'm very aware of it, and I'd like to see that go forward. In terms of holding the meetings here, it would be a good idea because we are a community and we want everybody
Jamie.
Thank you. Actually, this council did bring closed session meetings to the Vets Hall, as everyone is aware of, during employee situation that we worked through, and we worked through every closed session meeting here at the Vets Hall. To continue that is a good idea. I think our interim city manager is helping us get there, and I think that we will get there, just like we did through those personnel matters that were closed session. And in regard to the closed session and transparency, I think this council has operated that well, that way. Council has, considering past council changed the contracts of our two city employees in closed session without bringing that to open session. I think, I don't know if that's clear enough, but that has to be clear with people on how this council has been transparent, and the idea that things are done behind closed door. Closed session are discussion contracts, but typically when we're done, that is ruled in open sessions for everybody to understand that.
I'm going to ask a question that was just so address this question. Mention has been made of depletion of reserves. Could you please address general fund reserve versus risk management reserve?
As recent as last week, I conferred with our interim city manager, Mr. Collins, and our general fund reserve is at its policy required level of 27.5% of the general fund budget, which is approximately $2.75 million. Our risk management reserve by policy, we're required to maintain a level reserve. this council, when we came into office during our budget workshop, one of the first things we did was we restored the depleted budget from previous council. So I just want to be clear that we're not depleting our reserve and we're operating within our budget.
Anyone else want to chime in? Carla.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to respond also. During my tenure on council, we worked very hard to bring our reserves back and to have that security. We quit borrowing from reserves. For bringing those down. I think we have to live within our means and keep our balance, our budget balanced without borrowing and taking from reserves.
Thank you.
I'll comment.
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry, were you done? Sorry. Good. I'm a finance nerd, so I have looked back and read the old budgets and the current budget, and the most recent audit, which just came out last week, and by the way, is online in the city site. The governmental fund, and you have to understand there are different funds, but this, like the water and sewage fund, and the harbor fund, et cetera. The general fund in 2011 was $5.1 million. In 2012, it was $3.9 million. And now it is $2.9 million. It is declining rapidly. I am very concerned about that. I'm very concerned about our long-term liability for PERS. If you look at our long-term liability, it is significant. There have been some major changes in assumption at the state level that will impact us dramatically in the next 5 to 10 years.
Our declining funds. I did the same research, found the same information. So we are in serious trouble in terms of how much money we have in our reserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt, do you have some comments?
Yes. The general fund and the risk management fund are very important to the city. However, we also have to be honest that losing Dynegy, we are going to have some tough decisions to make in terms of revenue coming into the city. So just saying that we are deficient or having problems with the fund isn't sufficient. We have to look at money's coming in and be honest about that. And this is how we're going to do it, this is the hand we've been dealt. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question, John, you should be the first one to answer, and we're going to have 2 minutes on this one. This is about the wastewater treatment facility.
Hey.
This is a very popular question. So I'm going to try to synthesize some of the issues. Talk about the location, talk about comparisons to the Goleta facility, talk about the financing. So let's
biggest issue facing the community in the near term future, in the near term, you know, 5+ years. One, what's done is done. It will not be built on the existing site. There's no reason to even discuss that. We need to move forward, and we need to build a plant as quickly as possible. Time is money. Every day wasted is a significant cost to the sunk cost of building the facility. Number two, given the information that I've seen, which is the information that the public has seen, I couldn't tell you today exactly where that site should be. I could give you parameters that a biosolids treatment plant, but building a water treatment facility as well. Water in the future is gold. If you think we're dealing with a water issue that's short term, adverse comment affected, but your head's in the sand. We're going to have a long term water problem. And the
building of a water treatment facility that allows us to have access to secondary and tertiary treated water that we can capture and utilize will bring significant dollars back to this community and make the project. The variable costs come in with regard to the transport system of handling the treated water. Those are major costs, and the costs associated building the water treatment facility itself. And lastly, I would say there's still a question about, are we going to leverage this project over a larger number of individuals? Where does the community of Cayuga stand? Where are there opportunities for other partnerships to decrease the overall cost to us as a community?
Thank you. Nancy.
There. In terms of location, we have new consultants now who are basically looking at the same locations that our consultants were looking at before. We have a new possibility that has just popped up that I'll be going over to look at next Monday morning, and that maybe could be one of our best options. The other thing that has been talked about a lot and we're looking at least to some degree, is the concept of a regional wastewater facility. One of the questions there is 9.5 miles of pipe from here to there, and what that's going to cost the folks now and in the future, and how far do we want to go in terms of water reclamation. Obviously, we need it. Water, the lack of thereof, is an ongoing issue. It's not going to change soon. But how fancy do we want to get? Can we do a fancy park with basins and fun stuff while we're doing it? I don't think so, but I know that's been mentioned by the most important thing is that this wastewater facility has to be affordable, not only for the people now who are paying the bills, but we know it'll take a long time to pay it off, and it has to be affordable for our children and grandchildren to still afford to be able to live here. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, the elephant in the room, and everybody's talking about with this wastewater treatment plant, it's going to be moved. It's going to be moved. From my perspective, in terms of the list of the top 10 sites that have been researched by the city, from the PG&E property, are the best sites available. Whether one site is better than the other, the studies will tell. Looking at the long term, we have to move it, and if we move it out of town, area will not be necessarily be an issue, so we can create our oxidation ditches, and if we can in time go to reclaimed water. We have to be very careful about doing this because we haven't had new rates of water in Marl Bay since 1992. That's when the last time we changed our rates or listed our rates. We're going through that right now on the Public Works Advisory Board in terms of doing those rates. But as has already been stated, we have to be sure that probably 25 to 35 years. So we have to be forthright and very honest and not just be reactionary to the momentary necessities that we think are big now, but we have to look at the future. One part about being on this council is we would have a responsibility to do that. Now, whether or not we go to a regional water on board, it may be at CMC, the cost is a big issue. But however, looking at the cost of moving it out of town, there are grants available, and Los Osos has already been dealing with this, in terms of moving this site from point A to point B. So if we could $40-50 million That's a lot of money, but however, we've had stonewalling for the past 6 to 8 years, and the costs have gone up. Now's not the time to stonewall, but now's the time to be proactive and get it done.
Thank you. Jamie.
Thank you. I think since the I took office, this council has taken a very diligent approach on moving forward. It's been twofold. One, we hired the consultant to evaluate all the options, and we've seen what those options are. And throughout that workshop and that part of a wastewater treatment plant was sought in this room. Everybody was talking about what are the needs of the community. So that's one of the, that's how that document was developed, and it's taken into consideration cost, time, etc. Speaking of time, as a subcommittee member, I advocated to move the timeline up from 7 to 10 years to 5 years. I think that's very important. It was also exciting for our staff to say, to get on board and say, yes, we do need to accelerate this, and it's very important that we do that just in the speaking with them, they've made it very clear that ocean outfall discharge is going to be a thing of the past. In March, when I went to Washington, D.C. on behalf of the city to advocate for our harbor dredging funds, I met with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they had some very profound information as a whole for a nation and a state on water. And water reclamation is the future. That's what we'll see in the future for this nation and our country. It won't be an option. It'll be a mandate, and for all the right reasons. There are engineer was in mind as well, was where are we going to get that water? So we have to consider that as a component. I'm pleased with our progress.
Thank you. Carla. Thank you. Can I just say ditto to everyone's answers? We covered most all of it. And I do agree with the panel up here, all the comments. As we move forward, we need to not find ourselves becoming Los Osos, and I say that in the best way possible, meaning 30 years and $200 million later. So it is important that we continue to move forward. If it's like the one we have now, we'll be here much longer, and we'll be paying for it a lot longer than 25 or 30 years. It'll be more like 50 years. The water reclamation has become a very important component of that as we've continued to move forward in not just Morro Bay's needs for water, but our neighboring needs. I think we need to look at a lot of it more regionally. Whether we go out to CMC, we know one thing's for sure, the further we go, the more it costs. In regards to running the pipes, but we have an opportunity to share those costs regionally. I'm not advocating for it, but it certainly for the most part has been the Rigetti side, and I'm not supportive of that site in the sense that for many, many reasons, environmentally, ecologically, and the fact that it also abuts over 50 Morro Bay residential homes along there. The new site that's come about through Mr. McElvain is a little more intriguing in the sense that it's on his property and there could probably be a shared partnership. Our partnership with Cayucas is also what helps us to afford what we pay in the future, so we need to be considerate of how that moves and work with them also. Thank you. They're closing the Morro Bay Power Plant. And if elected, will you call for the rezoning of the 107-acre old power plant site for other community and economic development land uses? Also, address the loss of the economic loss that Dinergy represents and what alternatives you have for Morro Bay. So it's a twofold question, the site and the loss of income.
Thank you. Let me start with the second part of that. We've known for several taken a little over 5 years ago to start taking money out of the budget and putting it away so that we would not depend on that money in the future, because we knew this was coming. Dynegy is closed. I went on the tour. They're locking up all the doors. That's kind of the first part of the question. The second part is, would I rezone that? No, absolutely not. Dynegy and the industrial use in that area is what made us a city. To be a viable city, we have to have a strong economic base. Owners in town, just as much as I possibly can. We have to have some kind of a clean, safe, industrial base to make our city work. That's what pays the bills.
Thank you. Matt.
Well, on that location, speaking on the Dynegy property from Beach Street North, Measure D, it's very important that it's very likely that that property could be used in the future for some sort of marine facility. The city has been without a viable boatyard for a decade and a half. To possibly create a viable marine facility with a boat haul-out, with industrial apparatus there that can be used in terms of helping the fishing fleet. Now, whether or not that Dynegy property can be used to create income on, I don't think we should rezone that. I think we should keep it industrial. Whether or not that goes for the marine facility, whether it can be used for some sort of other power generation plant that doesn't use an intake or outfall, it's very important that the city keep that to help develop more funding sources.
Thank you.
If there's a viable company that comes in and purchases that, and they say, hey, we've got a business model to do that, and we're willing to pay for the rezoning and develop that, and it's in keeping with this community, then they need to consider that. We also need to identify, as I have, the general plan identified four industrial sites in 1988. And one of those sites was the power plant, and it identified that if there's any expansion or change in the future, our general plan will have to be amended. So I think that's clear there. As far as economic loss, I think we have planned for that loss in our budget ahead of we retain and attract our businesses to make sure we're growing our revenue. We need to consider that our partnerships, such as the San Luis Council of Governments, we get grants and as well that supply funding for our pedestrian bridge. So we need to partner with them, and we need to make sure that we're efficient in our company, our city. Thanks.
Carla.
It's a lot to get in 1 minute. anticipating the eventual closure, while on council, we voted to begin eliminating the money from that use. We also worked to, in formation with the hoteliers, to form the TBID, which has been an opportunity to raise TOT and bring some revenue streams in that now on the uprise, as we can see. In regards to the property owned by the power plant, I think that there's been a lot of studies done in the past, and one of those being the New Futures study. It's available online. There was a lot of hard work that went into that, and it was a very diverse group of people that came up with many, many, many opportunities and ideas, and I think revisiting that might best serve us at this point as we move forward.
That's one of the very few economic opportunities that we have in the community right now. In terms of the loss of revenue from the power plant, yes, I think there has been some planning over the years for the decline in those revenues. However, I don't think we've tightened the belt enough, as evidenced by the decline in the general fund, which has been significant. That property needs to be looked at, and parameters for development need to, number one, maintain the natural environment. Survive economically on three things: property taxes or taxes in general, our TOT tax, and sales tax. Would you like your taxes increased? I see a lot of heads going yes. Well, maybe that's an opportunity. But that is the one of the economic opportunities we have to take advantage of it. Thank you.
Okay. The next question has to do with small businesses and the business community, since we have the chamber sponsoring the business section 5 years from now. Matt, you're going to start answering this question. And do you support our small businesses in Morro Bay? Is pretty much the same idea. What about the businesses in Morro Bay downtown?
I'm very much of an advocate of build it and they will come. The city has a responsibility for infrastructure. The city also has a responsibility to deal with economic development council. So we need to work in partnership with our small businesses, but we also have to think of it as a city on this board or on the city. Make streamlining this process that people, when they come to town, they don't find it overly onerous to get permits and establish businesses here in town. Two, infrastructure, streets and roads. Going back to our general plan, if we have a general plan that's very not necessarily concise, but that is transparent, that is redone for 2014 instead of 1988, that will make it conducive for those businesses to look at it from outside of town and go, wow, Marl Bay, there's an opportunity here. It's very consistent across the board for every business to work here in town. Thank you.
Jeremy.
It's still an exciting document. I've spoken with different property owners in the downtown, and I believe there is a movement and a desire to improve the downtown. That, you know, there's so many of us that, you know, consider it to be so quaint, even in addition to what we consider the waterfront being so quaint. But that's an opportunity there to enhance that and bring that downtown visioning back to the city and implement that, in addition to considering a business improvement district. And would the businesses down there or the property owners be considered as it is now, but even in a better position for the future? Thank you.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you. I think there were incentives in place that have been removed that were intended to help the downtown businesses with facade improvement and some relief from fees for parking. And those were removed, those incentives. I would certainly revisit some opportunities to do that. I think that streamlining the permitting process and helping these businesses move forward is key to it. There's a business downtown that's been trying for over 6 months to get open, and that just haven't had access to. These things need to be fixed, and we need to be supportive of our business community.
Thank you. John?
Well, my business is right in the middle of that area. That's where I operate. So, yes, I'd love to see that area improved. And you know, the old adage, you know, you don't judge a book by the cover is really not true. You do. And so facade improvement in that area, if you know what I mean, is extremely important and must be addressed either through policy or some kind of assistance or help, much like we're considering for the Harbor Embarcadero property. Which says that that sales generally here are not consistent with other areas. And so I think we need to improve our marketing efforts. We seem to be drawing a clientele that doesn't have a lot of disposable income. Or if they do, they're not spending it here comparatively. And so we need to figure out a better way to bring folks to this town that will spend money when they stay overnight.
Thank you. Nancy. Gosh, this being last is hard. They've said it all. There's a couple of things I just want to we need to work and more closely with planning and permitting to get businesses established. As was said earlier, it's criminal what has happened to some people trying to start their businesses. We won't go into that any further right now, but it's one of the plans I'm working on. We need to have a strong chamber that can keep a list of available properties and help new businesses get started, to walk them through the process. We need to get back to our incentives for facade improvement and for the other incentives that we at one time had established for who have money to spend are from the north and the south. We need to market those areas more effectively. And finally, it's hard to say, but it takes money to make money. And we're going to have to invest in our business district if it's going to work.
Thank you. Next question will begin with you, Jamie, and it has to do with property rights. Apparently, there's dissatisfaction with the handling of private property rights in the past, and what can we do about that for the future? That current policy sustainable and worthwhile. So we're talking about private property rights and about public scrutiny of Embarcadero leases.
Have I got 1 minute on this, or are you going to be 2 minutes on something like this?
Why don't we take two?
Thank you. A little strategic there. I'm an advocate of private property. There's no doubt about that. I think we have to put private property rights in context. Our property rights are defined in our general plan and our ordinances. It's clear and simple. That's why into today's times. I think people struggle sometimes with going through the application process because it is outdated. So I'm an advocate for the general plan, and I am an advocate for our property rights, and they're all defined within our ordinances and general plan. And speaking to the waterfront, can you give me that question one more time, please?
Yes.
So that was scrutiny of waterfront lease sites.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I get this.
Do you support the current policy
I'll speak to that. Public scrutiny of the waterfront lease sites, I think what changed in this council was that we had taken our waterfront lease sites typically in closed session, and then it went through a process, and then it came to open session, and we had public input on, hey, we didn't really know what was going on with this. And then as we reviewed that, per the Brown Act, we should have been reviewing those lease sites in public session first, and then the financial part of it is done in closed session. I think there's been a benefit of it's scrutiny whatsoever. I think it's been participant of our public. It's also allowed the applicant to adapt to some of those inquiries from the public and council, and have a better project when it comes before council in its final stages. I think it's been a benefit.
Carla, thank you. That's a long question. tree limits, exactly. I've always been an advocate for property rights. I'm sure most all of us in here probably are. Beach homes and newer homes and people wanting to develop new projects. While on council, I worked on the committee for the general plan, and I'm looking forward to how that will help us move forward in regards to the changes. But certainly support property rights, certainly support property rights. In regards to the waterfront leases, they've always been public documents. As per the Brown Act, as Jamie mentioned, there are certain parts of it that are required to be held in closed session in regards to negotiations and things. Most all the leases are given a 5-year because we have so many coming up that old Pitkin leases, old county leases in 2018, it's come to the forefront a lot more, and I think that there could have been a little more respectful way in handling a few of those older leases and the tenants who have held those leases. But it is certainly going to change the face of the waterfront.
Thank you. John.
Yes, okay, tough question. Absolutely an advocate for personal property or private property rights. As a property owner on Mobile Boulevard, yes, I want to advocate for my own property. The document that defines a part of the economic strategy and the architecture, so to speak, of the city. And with an outdated 1986 plan, it's very difficult to navigate through things and make decisions. So that has got to be updated quickly with a lot of public input. Two, with regard to those leases or the leases on the Embarcadero, as much as possible that we do publicly, I agree. As much open input, and it must fit within the context of the general plan, and it must help drive the economy. Once again, I don't think we all understand how dire the financial situation is that we're facing in the community.
Thank you. Nancy.
Well, as I said in my opening statement, I'm definitely in favor of defending property rights. I think, number one, going through the process to build something in Morro Bay has to be more clear. It has to be concise. People have to know what their condominium or their business, whatever it is. We talk about compatibility and neighborhood compatibility. And what is that? We have a very eclectic little city here. We have little tiny beach cottages next to large homes. Some people have called it mansionization. If you've worked for years and years someplace out of town and you've saved all your money and you want to build yourself a nice big house and it fits within the parameters of what the city requires and you've taken the necessary steps, you need to be able to build what you So we need to remember those things. If the community wants them, then it's time to get busy and advocate for them. In terms of the Embarcadero, the property down there is held in trust for the people of Morro Bay from the state of California. We need to be careful, especially now that so many Pipkin leases are coming up, that we don't change the face of the waterfront. We have some beautiful new buildings. We have some older ones that are being restored and not changed. We need to keep the balance. Above all, along the waterfront and waterfront leases, we must for the fishing community.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, the general plan, well, this is a critical question, first of all, about property rights. It's a no-brainer on one hand. And it's not necessarily based on an individual mandate of property rights for that individual. When we think back, we're here. The reason everybody's sitting in this room and all of us up on the stage is because we're here for the city collectively. So when we think about those property rights, sure, there is a responsibility to each person. However, there's a larger responsibility to the community. And where that comes in, the critical part of that is our general plan. Our general plan is 26 years old. Doing that has been spoken, adding an item up here, is very important, not just to those individual property rights, but to us collectively as a city. So part of the responsibility of a city council isn't necessarily to be the sage on the stage and telling everybody what to do. We also need to work with the community, be the guide on the side, hear the voices out there in the community, what they want, and move forward with that to develop a new general plan. In terms of the Embarcadero, the Pimpkin leases, and that's incredible. And this is a huge time in our city. This is 50 years after the incorporation of our forthright and looking to the future. What are we going to do with those leases? When we look at our general plan, what sort of businesses do we want to attract? What sort of transparency do we want to have on board so everybody has an even playing field? If we do that, those businesses on the Embarcadero will, in time, benefit from that transparency. Those businesses that might be outside of town that could come in and develop, or the businesses that are there now that they can go, wow, this is an even playing field. So with that in mind, property rights are incredibly important, but it gets tied back to our general plan and our transparency. Thank you.
Thank you. Situation in Morro Bay.
Thank you. The homeless situation in Morro Bay is the same, I feel, as the homeless situation throughout our county, our state, our nation. We can't ignore that it exists. It does. And we're fortunate in Morro Bay and San Luis County that we don't have the extent of homelessness as other areas surrounding us. That being said, it's not just those who perhaps are living down in the creeks, but people who are living in others' garages, excuse me, in cars and things that are and members of our community, and they are members of our community, to help them, whether it be through providing meals or shelter opportunities or clothing opportunities. It is a global problem, and there's continued strides. I support those continued strides in helping to solve that. Well, I don't know if it's solvable.
Thank you. John.
I agree with the concern for the homeless. I don't know exactly from a quantification standpoint how big of an issue it is here, but I believe it's here. And one of my biggest concerns, not only is feeding the homeless important, but, you know, in the communities I've served, you know, health care for the homeless becomes very important. And so I think we have an opportunity, unfortunately, even though we've lost our safety net provider, which is CHC, in talking with the fire chief, you know, we've got a great little paramedic station there that could be utilized in conjunction with some volunteers like myself and others that are healthcare advocates to improve the health of those that are homeless as well as address the other issues. But I think it needs to be studied. I mean, I don't really know how big of a problem it is. I hear it's here, but again, I support studying it and helping rectify it.
Thank you, Nancy.
I think above all, our homeless issues or problems, whichever you want to call it, in Morro Bay, are more complicated than they look at first sight. It's not an issue that can just be quickly solved with one solution. We have Morro Bay residents who have lived outside because that's their choice for years and years. Where do they go? What do they do if they're driven out of the creek? They just go to another little creek place. We have people who have lost their jobs, people who are living on the edge, who can just barely make it, who are virtually homeless, who need food, who need shelter. We also have, I've noticed lately, a group coming through who's spent time in the grocery store parking lots. This is a little bit new in some respects, I think. And I spoke with a police chief about this recently, and she's working on some signage that would say, you know, don't give them money, and it shows where the money would go. You know, if they need food, give people food. But let's not be giving people on the street corners money to spend on drugs and cigarettes.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, first, a few seconds. I'm a high school English teacher. I work in an at-risk continuation high school. I deal with issues of poverty and homelessness every day. With that in mind, I do believe the measure of any community is how they take care of those who need help the most. We do have a fairly sizable contingent of folks that live in our creeks and that are homeless in town that do come to this very building on Monday nights to get a meal. And how we deal with that is very important, but the issue is very large also. It's not necessarily for our community to deal with. This is a county situation, this is a state, and this is a federal concept of how to deal with those that are downtrodden. Community-wise, how we can deal with that? We can encourage some sort of job training program. We have guerrilla gardeners here in town who work with people on that side of the coin and gives them some sort of work around town, helping with our civic properties, beautifying and then receiving money for that. So there is a way the community can help those.
Thank you. Jeremy.
Thank you. 2 years ago, this was an issue when I was running as well, and something that kind of flourished out of that was the ABAC, which is Estero Bay Alliance for Care, where a lot of the faith-based portions of our community got together and started discussing how they were contributing to different aspects of our community, whether they were homeless or whether they were just needed help on electric bill or food at that point. This council, you know, went in partnership with the Monday night food group by allowing this facility to be used for that. I think the guerrilla gardeners that were stated here, we have a community that really does look to reach out and help one another. And I think the guerrilla gardeners is one of those. The Alliance, the Estero Bay Alliance for Care is another one that just brings all of our faith-based community advocates together to ensure that there's food available for people. So on a small level, we are doing something, and in addition, we do have that potential in the county to have a new regional facility that potentially will come to fruition as well.
Thank you. The next question will begin with John, and it has to do with the Planning Commission. Do you believe our Planning Commission has had any economic impact on Morrow Bay? So we're talking about the function of the Planning Commission.
Do I believe that the Planning Commission's had an economic impact on Morrow Bay? Wow, that's an interesting question.
What is its function, function of the Planning Committee?
I think the function of the Planning Committee is to operate within the confines of a general plan that has been well-defined that allows them to do business in a manner that is set out through policies that have been developed by the council with input from the community. Two, I think also the Planning Commission has a responsibility to make sure that projects, when they're brought to the community, that there are viable processes within the city to allow those projects to move quickly if they can bring economic benefit and are viable for the community. So I believe that there should be significant input and oversight through that planning function to the City Council on how we move projects and how we make decisions and how quickly we make decisions with regards to economics.
Thank you. Nancy.
gosh, as a former planning commissioner for many years, I really like this question. I think one thing that people don't realize in the beginning is the projects that come before the planning commission are those things that we're we say are outside the box. When someone goes in to get a permit, and hopefully they can work through the permit process successfully, if they meet all the requirements for that permit, it doesn't go to the Planning Commission. It's just administratively approved. But when something's a little different, it has to go to the Planning Commission. And in terms of economic impact, yes. Above all else, the Planning Commission has a serious job to do in terms of economic impact, because when someone wants to build something, it's not only the building, but it's the people who are hired to do the work, and it's jobs for people in town. So they need to look carefully to make sure that a project is feasible and viable and is going to work for the community.
Thank you. Matt.
One thing I think is very important about the Planning Commission is it does not operate in a vacuum. It operates at the behest of the City Council. With that in mind, it can't be willy-nilly. It can't just say, I like some things, I don't like some other things for some weird, adverse, or ad hoc reason. They have to be consistent with the general plan. So with that in mind, the Planning Commission has this incredible responsibility as an arm of the City Council, as a representative of us as city citizens, to protect us and to adhere to the general plan. So with that in mind, with this, we're going to go back and forth, and we've seen this come up in the past hour and a half. It was talking about the general plan. The Planning Commission has this responsibility to adhere to the letter of the law in that Planning Commission, to that general plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamie.
Hi, thank you. I think some descriptions were made pretty clear as far as projects that come before the Planning Commission that require further review, as Nancy described. The Planning Commission's job is to advocate for our general plan and the policies and ordinances that exist. If you advocate for those, then, you know, and there are some areas where our staff will have to evaluate a project and propose findings to support a project. And the Planning Commission will have to do their due diligence and ensure that they're meeting and advocating for our documents, our general plan, and our ordinances that exist as they're evaluating projects. As an economic impact, I guess it was one of the questions to this was there is an economic impact to us, and part of that is allowing, as I advocated, to adjust our scheduled meetings for higher efficiency to Tuesdays, and I think that was in an effort to create more efficiencies and better production for our Planning Commission and our staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Carla.
Thank you. Certainly the guidance and input from the Planning Commission to help move projects forward that are outside the box is what their job is as part of the process. I think that when you create unnecessary roadblocks that go beyond that and cause delay in projects, it becomes counterproductive in an economical sense. The benefits of working with the projects that come before the Planning Commission, is that you're providing jobs for people in the trades industries that live in our community. You're providing sales of goods and services that come back to us in sales tax, and then the completed project that's going to be someone's home, a business that, again, provides jobs and things. So working with the applicants and no unnecessary roadblocks, I think, will certainly economically benefit us.
Thank you. Nancy, we'll begin with you to answer this question. We just talked about the Planning Commission. Now we're going to talk about the Coastal Commission. The current City Council, this person says, is very tied to the Coastal Commission. How do you feel about a working relationship with them?
As a member of City Council for 4 years now, I know that our previous council 2 years ago was also very closely tied to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission is a very, very important influence on anything that happens in Morro Bay, and we have always worked very closely with staff to achieve the things that we need and their look at their point of view. The Coastal Commission is I stopped to look at the sign. We have always had, there have been a couple burps along the way, but I think in general, the city has always worked closely with the Coastal Commission, and they are a very important part of anything at all that happens in Morro Bay, not just the waterfront. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt.
The relationship of the city with the Coastal Commission is imperative to what we do as a city. In the last 4 or 6 years, the city has wasted a lot of money trying to counteract whatever the Coastal Commission has said about our wastewater treatment plant, a few million dollars at least. So with that said, we need to adhere to that and work with them as partners. Instead of having an adverse relationship, let's see the letter of the law and work within the parameters of those laws, move ahead with the plan of our city, and get things done. So, in closing, the California Coastal Commission, I do believe, can be worked with from the City Council's point of view to move the city forward.
Thank you. Jamie.
Yes, thank you. Our Coastal Commission, I believe we haven't had that strong of a relationship with the Coastal Commission, and when I look back at some of the documents and things that have transpired over the years, you know, forwarded on to the Coastal Commission, where that's where the difficulty was, and whether or not it was a good relationship or not, that we struggled through that. So we invested hundreds of thousands of dollars updating our general plan. It went to the Coastal Commission, and ultimately we got a letter from the Coastal Commission saying, your application has been expired. It went beyond the 5 years, and it's now denied. So we need to foster that relationship with the Coastal Commission. I believe I've done that. I've met with the executive director.
Carla,
thank you. I think the Coastal Commission, I look at them in terms of a partner. I think it's a partnership with the City of Morro Bay, the residents, the projects that go before them. We're there to work with them collectively for the best outcome of our community and fitting within the Coastal Acts of California. I think that there's always different projects that are going to be more controversial in our community or any community as we go before them, and it's working through those challenges to achieve the best outcome for Morro Bay. So staff changes, our council and government and philosophy change. So I think that we just continue to keep moving forward and work in partnership.
Thank you, John.
I absolutely agree that there must be a positive working relationship with the Coastal Commission. Just about anything that we do in this city must be reviewed or looked at by the Coastal Commission. And so to have an ongoing positive relationship with them is important. Two, I think it's very important to be proactive. And I've seen that with our wastewater treatment facility. Initial study that has been done and the update and have given us a positive signal with regard to the direction that we're heading. And so my point is that being proactive, involving them early on processes and making them aware can be very advantageous to us, can save time and money and efforts as an example that I just gave with the water treatment facility. So, yes, I do think it's important.
Thank you. Now I'm going to do something a little different. Some of these questions different question. So I'll start with Matt. How are you going to handle all the time requirements during the day and nights with your other life schedule?
I think the best training to that is being a parent. Right? I say that, but also for the last 8 years, I've been a coach of all sorts of teams for my kids. And I've said from day one, there's no way I can go to the city council. I don't have the time to do it, because I do believe you have to put a lot of time. I'm no longer coaching. Now that my kid's going in high school and middle school, I thought, I have all this free time. Let's try for city council, right? So how can I do that? I'm a pretty energetic person. I spend a lot of time on things. And so I do believe my life requirements are such that I can put in the necessary time for city council. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamie, as the incumbent mayor, this seems like one that you should look at. I think this came up 2 years ago, the first time I did this candidate for.
You have a good memory.
Well, it's about North Mall. Mall based streets apparently need attention, and the area needs attention. So, Jamie, what about North Mall?
Well, thanks a lot. And I just make a quick comment to Matt's energy. I think he's got plenty of energy for everybody up here. Going back to North Marlboro, I think early on in my term as mayor and coming before council, we had a street summit that went before Public Works Advisory Board, and we had an outpouring input from our public saying, hey, we need to look at how we're paving our streets. We had a paving management plan that was pretty much North Morro Bay as well. We have needs that we want to address some repair rather than just paving. So with that information, I advocated for that input. And at our goal setting, we redirected our staff to revisit that paving management plan, which they did. They came back with a plan that addressed streets at in a holistic sense, even in North Morro Bay. And so I think we covered that well. Thank you.
Thank you. Cora, you can try this one. Tourism is important, but it's one of other revenue sources for the city.
Thank you for the question. I think that tourism certainly has been the direction that we've gone, but in talking earlier, there was comments made about the future of the power plant property and how that fits in regards to green energy, light industry, and things like that. So I think it's important for us to maintain our options for zoning for light industry, light commercial uses, along with supporting our fishing industry, which the last few years has been on the rise. Several years ago, there was some mention of a report, and it was reminded to me again just recently. Research for you and help you find your shortfalls in regards to what the community is looking for and will support in the business community beyond tourism. So maybe it's time that we revisit some of those opportunities and invest in that.
Thank you. John, will being the head of the Chamber of Commerce while sitting on the City Council be a conflict of interest?
Most likely. So if you elect me, unfortunately, I believe it is a conflict of interest and that I would probably have to resign from that position.
All right, thank you. Council member.
I've been here. That's a good one. I think I work really, not only as a council member, I work hard as a council member, I do my homework, I go in and I talk to staff, I talk to citizens, I spend a lot of time walking through town, talking to business owners, walking the Embarcadero, I go down and I talk to fishermen, I love to buy fresh fish in town. But in addition to those kinds of things, I've worked hard with our local AAUW. I work with the Morro Bay Garden Club, which the citizens, the Art Foundation, the Public Art Foundation, to provide funds for the high school students to paint a mural at our Shasta Street Pocket Park. I've worked with the county health department, and I keep busy.
Thank you. All right, now it's time for our closing remarks. So we'll begin with, I think, whose turn is it to begin? John? First, because we're running over a little bit.
Okay.
That's it.
Easy. I'm hoping you'll vote for me as for my second term on City Council, because I'd like to be part of a new council that can work together harmoniously with true consensus and decision-making.
Thank you. Matt?
Well, thank you all for coming. This is an important time for Marbury. We had a chance to move this city forward. Not just for a year, 4 years of council's candidacy, but for the next 10, 20, 30 years. This is a very important time for the city to do that. We can have a
thank you. Jamie.
Thank you for this opportunity, and this is my message for you. Like other cities, our cities have ordinances, municipal codes, policies, and a general plan. These documents are promises. They shape our lives, they guide how our community is developed, how tall our buildings are, whether we have safe routes to school for our children, and where our wastewater treatment plant should be located. There are promises we create as a community, and there are promises we must keep as a community. These ordinances, codes, policies, and plans are responsibility to alert council. Council may then consider the changes to the promise with the public input. It takes leadership to uphold the promise and to envision how our promises will best serve our community in the long term. I have protected our promise. I have protected the promise, and I have acted in the best interest of this community. I ask for your vote on June 3rd.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to for all of us to present our positions today on things that are concerning to the community. I would be very honored to receive your vote. Chamber hosting this forum, and the League of Women Voters, thank you for your time. For those of you who submitted your questions and those at home watching, I have a website, Carla Wixom, number 4, for mayor. Please feel free to visit the website or call me with any questions, comments, concerns, or something you want to share. And my phone number is 441-7057. And again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jim.
Good, thank you. As somebody once said, I want to move from the guide on the side to the sage on the stage. I just heard that recently. From a background standpoint, we love Morro Bay recently, and I think I bring a big business background and oversight leadership strategy that is needed. We've got some major projects to address, some major financial issues facing us, some operational issues that are extremely important, and I believe my background, given that, will be useful in addition to my collaborative nature.
Thank you. Thank you, candidates, for your participation. Thank you for the chamber for sponsoring this, and you, the audience, for your
back to work.